My name is Victor Kubik. Welcome to another edition of Inside United. Today we're going to talk about what the United Church of God is doing in the Caribbean. We have with us today Chuck Smith, who is senior pastor of this entire kaleidoscopic and colorful region. Welcome, Chuck.
Glad to be here, Vic. You're going to talk about one of my favorite subjects, and that is the Caribbean.
Well, the Caribbean is a very large geographic area comprised of many islands and many nations and several languages. I mean, it's just almost incomprehensible. It's so close to the U.S., and yet it's just kind of a mystery place. And when people think of the Caribbean, they think of cruises, they think about vacation spots, they think about offshore banking and who knows what else. Let's talk about this area and what you do there as a pastor.
Sure. Thank you, Vic. The Caribbean, over 1 million square miles. As we try to cover that area, we have quite a few churches there. From our church in Fort Lauderdale down to our church in Trinidad, it's 1,600 miles by plane, so it takes a little bit of time to get there. We also have two countries in South America with Suriname and Guyana. So in the Caribbean, we have a church starting in the north at the Bahamas, Freeport, Bahamas. We have three churches in Jamaica, Kingston, Ocho Rios, and Montego Bay. We have a church in St. Lucia, one in Trinidad, a church in Haiti, and we have members on Dominica, St. Vincent, Beckway, Grenada. So we have quite a few churches of God and a lot of breadth to cover and to take care of in the Caribbean.
Looks like you've got already just the nations and just the languages. You've got English, you've got Spanish, you've got Dutch, and what else do you have?
Well, we have French, of course.
Oh, yes.
We have English, but we also have, they have a lot of their own language, Patois, which is a kind of a French slave language that they still use quite often. They keep you on your toes, trying to keep up with all the literature, trying to give them the booklets they want and they need. And also the growth. We've had incredible growth every year for the last 8 years. We've had double-digit growth. You've got a lot of things to try to get done.
Well, one thing that we marvel at, Chuck, but both you and Mary, is how you're able to prioritize, you know, where to go, you know, who to handle, because you simply cannot handle everything like a normal church. There's no highways between countries. I mean, it's all air flights between one place to another. You've got to prioritize where you go. You've got to have a local organization in each of those areas, and it appears that you do. How do you do it?
Well, I have a wonderful wife who helps me organize things and keeps things going and gets my flights lined up. 1 year I had 27 flights through the Caribbean in 1 year. You had delays on at least a third of those flights, and some of them were even canceled. So you've got to learn to be flexible. And so the people, basically with Skype, with Zoom, and with the technology that we have today, we're able to stay in contact with most of the brethren. I'm able to give messages. But I also know how important it is in the Caribbean, and we've tried to do this. We try to give all the churches, the people in the churches, a shepherd, a voice that they can come to. Every nation is different. They may speak the same language, but they have different cultures. They have different ways of doing things. So you have to have the leaders in the church. You have to raise them up and then be able to work with them and stay in contact with them so that you have the pulse of the church so that you feel like you're doing the best you can to give them the food that they really need. And know that it's not just a tape you stick in, it's not just a CD, it's just not a video you watch, but that somebody is looking after them, thinking about them, praying for them every day, and staying in contact with them every single week.
It's amazing. I mean, I haven't traveled that much through the area, but I've been to a couple islands. One was Barbados. The thing that struck me is that that island was, you know, quite wealthy with all the hotels and all that. But then when you get into just away from that, you find a lot of poverty and the dichotomy between the rich and the poor and the fact that those areas are exploited, I feel, because of their climate and because of their beauty. by people who want to vacation there, but you have a lot of poor people that subsist and live in those areas who need to be cared for.
So many of the islands are really, they're designed anymore for tourism, to have tourism as their mainstay. And of course, during this lockdown, during this COVID-19 issue, a lot of those, they just had to completely shut down. There's no money coming in. One of those is Haiti. Haiti, I just got off the, I just got off Skype this morning with Joseph Jean, our deacon there. Food supply is very scarce right now in Haiti. So trying to, we had some reserves set aside there for the church. So our deacon there is distributing the food weekly as he goes. And because we cannot have services in our building that will hold quite a few people, he's having to go to different houses. He goes to a different house every 2 hours on the Sabbath. So he starts out early in the morning, meets 8 to 10 people here, and then goes over here, and then stays for 2 hours, brings him a little food, and then he goes over here. Sabbath before last, he was said, I didn't get in until 9 o'clock. He started at 9 in the morning until 9 o'clock at night. But he was able to go to almost everyone in the church and be able to have a one-hour, hour-and-a-half service at each of those. So it can be very taxing, but he is a very zealous man.
Well, what's interesting is that how there was nothing in Haiti, and now all of a sudden there's just activity with enthusiastic work like that of Joseph Jean and you, too. And we were looking forward to some of our young people going there to work on projects, you know, teaching computer skills. Maybe you can tell us some of what the purpose of those projects was.
Yes, we were wanting to do with the young people come over there and teach English and computers. Because the nation of Haiti has so much unemployment because most of them do not have any skills. But if you know English and you can find your way through a computer fairly well, there are plenty of jobs. Mm-hmm. And so I was able to work with a few individuals here from Miami who have companies that would like to hire people from Haiti. They were behind us as they also have companies there in Haiti that were willing to employ these people and begin to work with us. So that was our plan, but basically the nation went into a civil war. As we were only a week or two away from starting those classes and having everything, people were just being shot and killed, and the police were fighting with the military. The military were fighting with different factions and terror groups there, and it's just it was a situation where we just had to back off and try to regroup. And we did a little bit over the internet, being able to teach a few. And I sent one individual from my congregation here, William Brown, over, and he held a class for about two and a half weeks because we got him in. And of course, it helps that he's black. Because you stand out when you're white. I've been in the airport and I'm the only white person there. And so usually white means America or Britain, and it means green. It means money. So they're going to come either ask you for it or try to take it from you. So it can be a rough area to work yourself through. But God's protected us and blessed us. But I just didn't. We just weren't in a position with the government not being able to help us. And the United States consulate even said, we can't help you. There was so much kidnapping going on at that time, and still is. So until they gets a little control, the government gets control back of the country, then we're going to have to hold up. But that hasn't stopped Haiti. I mean, Joseph Jean and Fennell, his assistant, a young man in his late 20s, I've been working with him, and he's been working with Joseph Jean, and he gave his first sermon last week. He'd been giving sermonettes before that time, so he is coming on. So we are building a group of men there that can begin to spread out and take care of the growth that's coming from the church.
Certainly, this is an area for us to be concerned about and to pray for.
Well, yes, because the growth, it's for a while before this COVID thing, it was the fastest growing church in the Caribbean that I had. And we had over 100 many times at our services. And we had to even draw back a little bit because we had another church that believes what we believe over there, and they wanted to come with our church. And they've got 400 or 500 people. And I just said, no, we need to hold up a little bit till we can, you know, get a control over this thing and have more leaders that can teach our teachings.
Absolutely. Otherwise, it's chaos.
It is.
Right.
So now that we're having Haiti, now all of a sudden Puerto Rico's jumped up.
Yeah, that's the next place I was going to talk to you about. You've been saying that that's an area that has really come alive.
Yes. Someone asked me a while back, I think it's been, about 4 years ago, I made a trip there just to check out all of our Good News subscribers at that time. And so I met in three different cities with groups of people, but nothing really came of that. And so I thought, well, let's see where it goes. So then about 6 months ago, someone from church contacted me and said, well, hey, would you be able to handle Puerto Rico? We really keep getting things from there. And I said, well, I don't know that I can't. He said, well, we keep getting calls. Would you answer the phone calls? Would you talk to the people there? I said, well, put my name down. I'm here. I'll take it whenever it is. Well, next thing you know, I get 4 phone calls in 1 week, the first week, from Puerto Rico. One was a guy contemplating suicide. Mm-hmm. And so I spent a few hours with him. Others wanted to find out about our work. Could we get a church there? Mm-hmm. Former Church of God members scattered out through this island that came to me, or they sent emails to me and go, when can we have our church back? Mm-hmm. I love that passion.
Yeah.
The Caribbean's full of passion. And it's channeled in the passion for the truth and passion for studying the Bible. And so I feel like God's going to open some doors there, being I already have contacts there. We already have groups of people who want to meet. I just want to find a way so that they can be taken care of, they can be nurtured, and it isn't just, watch this video or tune onto this website, but someone that they can really be able to talk to and communicate and have a pastor, have a shepherd. That makes such a difference. And I feel like if there's one thing that, being I've been involved in the Caribbean for over 20 years, one of the things that I think has caused us or been allowed and have allowed us to grow so much is that we have people on the ground, and we have myself and other people who are involved that really want to take care of them. Mm-hmm. We really get involved in their lives. We know their names. We know their job. We know where they live. We know everything about them. We counsel them. And now we have internet in almost all of our church buildings. They can come there and talk to us. You know, they can get service, or they can talk to us afterwards. We can set aside time. We can just communicate so much better, and they feel like they belong. It mm-hmm. isn't just like, oh, there's some church in Cincinnati. Mm-hmm. But it's like they get that family feeling, and that's what we want, because anybody that's gone to our feast sites in the Caribbean, they just adopt you, and you're part of that, and they just love to spend time with you. They want to know everything about you. They want to know about your family, and that's so big to them. And so I realized how important this family church that we have in the Caribbean is. So that's why we're doing what we're doing.
Now I'd like to hear about Guyana, and also, don't forget, I'd like to talk to you a little bit about Suriname as well. Go ahead.
Oh, those are the two areas of Stan Brahmer, and he's got more energy than Energizer Bunny, and I'm blessed to have him because he does speak Dutch, and he speaks German, and he speaks other Spanish, and speaks English, and he, well, he just loves to speak. You know that, Nathan.
Yeah, I know that.
and I'm blessed to have him and Jeff both.
And so Stan records something through the week and then streams it down.
Oh, yes.
There.
Uh-huh. Oh yes, he sends it to him and has a sermon, and he gives it in Dutch, and he's in contact with them every single week, and so he really takes care of them. And little did we know that Guyana had found oil off their coast. They had explored a few years ago, about 5 or 6 years ago, but it was so deep that there was no real way to get it up. And so Guyana is one of the poorest countries, similar to Haiti in the Caribbean. You still have buggies and horses and mules pulling things through and so forth in the city. So it was very poor. And then they found this oil, And amazingly, in the last 5 years, they have found a great way to bring that oil up. And so when they were able to bring that oil up, there was such an abundance of it that they started drilling other wells. And when they started drilling these other wells, here was all this other oil and all this other oil. And then they found out they have the reserves down in the ground that's been estimated is more than Saudi Arabia.
Really?
And so the oil that they brought up this year will bring up their GDP by 10 times. Increase just what they brought up this year. What they're bringing up 2019 and went into 2020.
Well, I hope that the people can benefit. A lot of times, you know, when they find this kind of stuff, it's the rich people, the rich countries on the outside do the drilling. They take the money, the people stay. In fact, they stay poor and they get polluted.
Yes, that happens so many times. And they're working with the government so that so much money is set aside so that, matter of fact, the investors in some of the oil companies demanded that in refineries, that so much money be set aside or they wouldn't do it because they knew that they've seen this happen before. And next thing you know, a country is overthrown. And when you're that close to, you know, Venezuela or any of those countries, anything can happen. So they have, so far, they are building new roads. They are putting money aside. But it's amazing that our church started at that time. Just when that is, all of a sudden people were coming in and were working more people. And now, because of this great influx of jobs and wealth, all the people that have left Guyana all those years ago because there was no work, because they were hungry, because of all these problems, they're now coming back. Mm-hmm. And some of those people are very interested. They were interested in the church. So I look at it as probably the fastest growing church we'll have in the Caribbean in the next couple of years.
That's Guyana.
There's a lot of people. That's Guyana.
Wow.
That's Guyana.
Okay. Chuck, one more thing that I'm very interested in. People would like an update. In the Bahamas, the hurricane went through last year, and it was terrible. That one city was totally wiped off the map. And you brought over boatload after boatload of building supplies. I'd like to have you share with our audience here what's happened.
Yeah, it's incredible. The one of the most powerful hurricanes ever, Category 5, sat over on top of this one island for almost 48 hours and did not move, and brought flooding like it's never been seen before. Some of our houses, our members, they were standing in 3 foot of water. One widow actually called me from on top of a table. And she was like, I don't know what to do. It keeps coming up, and I said, get on top of the table, and keep praying. And she was afraid it was going to come up because some of it did. So many people died where it just came in. But sure enough, it went down, and it was a real tragedy. I've been there a couple of times since that. They are really strong people. They are building back. We were able to help our brethren. We sent over 30,000 pounds of supplies that were furnished by the United Church of God by Good Works. And it's just people who wanted to send things and give things and help them. Mm-hmm. So we were able to put all of our members back in running. Within probably 2 to 3 weeks, all of our members were up and running and were back in their houses. And so now all of them, we re-roofed a couple of houses where it just completely tore the roof. Our water was leaking in. We were able to take care of that. We were able to help furnish all of the homes that where people lost things. We were able to help even their family members. And there was enough given so that we were able to go into, we had them go into the different areas that were really affected more than anything else, and people lost so much, and they went in and took materials in and helped the people rebuild their homes so they would have somewhere to live. So United Church of God has a very good name right now in Bahamas because of everything that they did for people.
What about things that we could do at this time? Is there anything that's really neglected on our part that we can do?
In the Bahamas?
Well, just overall, just overall in the Caribbean, in the area.
Well, I would have. There's always needs. But I would probably say that when people are able to come to the Feast of Tabernacles in the Caribbean, that helps as much as any. It gives people encouragement, but it also, because of some of the offerings that they leave, just like Jamaica requires no subsidy. We don't have to subsidize them from the home office. We just use whatever is there at the feast. So that helps us a great deal. It helps makes them feel more independent too, as they have to take care of those funds and so forth. But probably, if I had to ask for one thing, it would be for any members or people who could help with the Spanish for Puerto Rico, because I see that as a very growing, and anyone who has relatives or has goes to Puerto Rico and so forth, and they could give us help. I would love to hear from them. I would love to be able to have some translators that could translate letters for me. I know you have David at the home office, but sometimes if there's people in our own area, I know Rick Shaby's offered, he has some people willing to help there in his church. So I'm looking forward to working with Rick. So the United Church and Good Works, they've been so generous that I can't say enough. I mean, they've helped us through, you know, whether it was Haiti or whether it was hurricanes in the Bahamas or wherever we needed. And people have always been there.
Well, Chuck, it's been really great talking to you, just to get a little bit of an overview of what's happening in the Caribbean. By the way, is it Caribbean or Caribbean?
Well, it's Caribbean in the north, Caribbean in the south. So it depends on which island you're on. So.
Okay. Anyway, we want to thank all of our listeners here for coming on Inside United to hear our conversation with Chuck Smith. Write to us at podcast@ucg.org with any questions or suggestions. Be sure to tell your friends about Inside United. You can find us on the homepage of ucg.org. Click or tap on the podcast button on the top menu, and you can also get us through your favorite Apple or Android podcast app. And now, just recently, we are on Spotify. You can go to Spotify, go to podcast, and look up Inside United, and you can get Inside United off of Spotify. So we'll say goodbye. Come back soon for more.
This is a production of the United Church of God. For more, visit ucg.org.